This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Booksplode, The New Avengers Volume 1 Breakout. Don't let it go away. This feeling's got to stay. Don't let it go away. This feeling has got to stay. And I can't believe I've had this chance now. Don't let it go away. Hello, welcome to Books Explode. I'm Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And we are talking about the New Avengers Volume 1 Breakout. Books Explode is the book review show brought to you by the patrons who unlocked it at patreon.com/ifanboy. And we take a look at a collected edition or original graphic novel or something other than your regular weekday comics or weekly comics, as I should say. And we thought, with Bendis starting up at DC, the big move he made earlier this year, that we should go back and take a look at really the book that it didn't start him off at Marvel, but really launched the Bendis era at Marvel.
As a sort of guy who steered the ship.
Yeah. I mean, he had clearly written before. He had even written the previous issues of this series, but this was the book that really launched him as the guy who shaped the Marvel Universe for the next 13 years in some capacity. Mm-hmm. So, the New Avengers Volume 1 Breakout, it includes the New Avengers 1 through 6, and as we were figuring out before the show, it was really hard to figure out or remember where the Avengers were at this point. We were obviously, at the time, this was 2000, and at the end of 2004 we figured out, right?
Yeah.
We were doing iFanboy, we were basically a year away from starting the podcast. I was always an Avengers kid when it came to the Marvel Universe. That was my corner of it. Our old co-host Ron, he was an X-Men guy, but I read the X-Men, but I was an Avengers kid. But I don't think even I was reading the Avengers at that point before the New Avengers came along. I think I had dropped off.
You weren't reading Geoff Johns.
I don't think I did.
So, to people listening, Bendis starts. The numbers get really screwed up, but I'm going to use my whole real numbers to just sort of say where we are. Bendis starts at issue 500. Goes to 504. That's Avengers Disassembled.
Yeah.
503. It's four issues. Chuck Austin wrote a little run in there, nine issues. Geoff Johns wrote a couple years before that, ending at what officially would be number 491.
Right.
So Geoff Johns, his big move was to go over to Marvel, and he was kind of a big star at DC before then, but not anything compared to what he was when he went back to DC.
Yeah, I mean, he was still relatively young and new at the time. This is his only major Marvel work.
Right, and it was supposed to be a big deal, but now in retrospect, I was like, oh, he wasn't really Geoff Johns yet, in the sense that I think he would have been when he returned. Anyway, so that sort of shows you where we are. And Bendis had been doing, he'd been doing Powers, he'd been doing Ultimate Spider-Man, and then Ultimate X-Men for a little bit, but really Ultimate Spider-Man was his thing.
And all of his indie work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he came on for Avengers Disassemble, and basically his job was to break down the old Avengers, was to destroy them, and so that they could be built back up again in the New Avengers. But that was the storyline in which the team completely fell apart.
Hawkeye was famously killed, Ant-Man died, the Vision died, and it ended with the team disbanding. No more Avengers. And then, lo and behold, we have this new book launched, The New Avengers number one.
Wait, by- No More Avengers is... Don't get it confused with House of M.
I know, I'm just saying that was what, that was the result of it, was at the end there was no more Avengers. What's crazy is, you know, as an Avengers fan, so I, and we were doing iFanboy, and that's a major comics commitment.
Not the podcast.
No, but still, we're doing iFanboy, the website. I wasn't reading Avengers. Like, how crazy is that? That's how low they'd sort of fallen, the Avengers had fallen in esteem in the comics community. So it was relaunched as The New Avengers with Brian Michael Bendis writing, David Finch on art.
Sorry, interesting. Just this is a side note, is that the artist for Chuck Austin's run, at least the last part of it, was actually Scott Collins, who was Johns' partner on the Flash stuff that got him the job at Marvel.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, there was a big... just,
The Avengers was in a weird place at the early 2000s.
Yeah, I wasn't reading it. I think I was actually really... moving away from a lot of the bigger superhero stuff at that point. That was my sort of, you know, mid-20s. Like, I don't want this stuff.
And it just wasn't popular. It wasn't capturing the imagination. And so Bendis relaunches the book with the idea that this should be somewhat similar to the Justice League. We should be having bigger characters, bigger name characters in the Avengers. So this is what we're taking a look at here, the first six issues in Avengers. And so my question for you before we get into the story, Josh, is how much of this did you remember but without prompting?
You mean when I was reading the book, did I go,
before you picked it up and you looked at the cover, the lightning striking behind the silhouetted New Avengers, did you remember what the story was? Did you remember how they came together? Did you remember what happened in that first six issues?
Almost nothing. I think, like, right away when I looked at the title and I saw the beginning of it, I went, oh, right, there's a jailbreak. That's how it starts. That's about it. That's about all I remembered. And then, like, I remembered the team, more or less. And, like, I knew this was, like, when Luke Cage became a thing. I knew this was when Spider-Man and Wolverine were both on the team. But other than that, not so much.
I sort of blew past the cover because I read it digitally. And I had sort of forgotten... I don't know. I'm probably just an idiot or I'm tired, but I just sort of forgotten what the lineup was. So, I mean, obviously I knew Captain America and Iron Man, and it opens up with, you know, in the very beginning with Jessica Drew and Luke Cage. But then I'd somehow forgotten that Wolverine was on the team, even though we just talked about Wolverine being on the team in the last podcast. So there was a little bit of surprises here. And I remembered the breakout part, but a lot of the details I'd forgotten. So when it's, you know, early on when it's revealed that Jessica Drew is sort of a double agent, I went, oh, right, yeah, that story. And so this was – I had a hell of a fun time reading this book.
Well, that was the thing. And there's a great many – there's a great number of points I need to make about this as we go through. And I want to try not to forget them, but I also don't want to waste them all ahead of time.
Sure.
So this is really the thing that captured me the most was that this is before Civil War, which is a major turning point for Marvel Comics, you know, 616 universe, whatever you want to call it. This is before the Skrull – well, the Skrull stuff is after Civil War, but this is where the seed for that is planted.
But it's also before the films. That's important as well.
And that was the other thing I was going to say, is this is the last time that the voices of these characters are determined by the comic books that came before them.
Right. And not the casting directors.
I found that so... I found it so refreshing. I thought, oh, this isn't Robert Downey Jr. talking to me. This is Tony Stark.
In fact, he is not at all Robert Downey Jr. And he is not at all in that place in the world even. You know, he stands next to Cap in the cover because he's one of the founding members, but he's not the most important person on the team here.
No.
And I think this era beginning in early 05 and going to, I don't want to say 08 because that's when Iron Man came out, but things didn't change immediately. But that the next 5 or 10 years, I think, is probably the with Bendis leading the Avengers, probably the last golden age for me as an adult of Marvel Comics.
Yeah. I really did. I went, oh, this is superhero comics to me. And I was a little like, ding, ding, like, this is maybe a little of what I don't find satisfying about it now because I was like, this is Captain America. And the voices were all... And I actually don't want to give the impression that I think Bendis did an amazing job on everybody. It's like, you don't.
Right.
There was a couple of times where that's a weird thing for Captain America to say.
Sure.
His Matt Murdock was pretty on point because I feel like he actually did set the tone for all the Matt Murdock that came after it. And he'd been doing that. He'd been doing Daredevil. That's the other thing he was doing. His Luke Cage, dialogue notwithstanding, Luke Cage had dialogue problems. But I remember that too. I remember like, oh, right, he can't write black people. I remember that as a thing.
But also, this is where, regardless of that, this is where Luke Cage became a huge deal in the Marvel Universe.
Totally.
Right?
And everything else about Luke Cage at this point is what you saw in the TV show.
Yeah.
Like, it's all right there, which I thought was cool. Jessica Drew, I remember coming out of this, and I didn't really know anything about her.
No, because you hadn't seen her really since the 70s in any real way. So, that was one of the brilliant moves in this part, was to bring Spider-Woman into the team.
Peter Parker, I thought, was like he had Peter Parker down cold immediately. And it was this weird phase where Peter Parker is still a teacher in it at the same time, which I thought was really funny. But so he's like not quite midlife, but like he was older, young adult.
Yes.
Peter Parker, which I don't think is all that bad, relatively speaking. Oh, Bendis had also been an alias, obviously. That leads into this.
Yes.
It's
Bendis coming out of his indie work, he got Ultimate Spider-Man, he got Daredevil, and he got Alias,
yep,
which were all super important in different ways. But this was the book where he was put at the center of the Marvel Universe. This is the book where the Avengers officially took over for the X-Men as the centerpiece.
After he killed Hawkeye,
yeah,
which I think is why I didn't read this.
I'm sure. So the main thrust of the six issues is really just I thought, hysterically enough, it's all Electro's fault.
Right away, first page is Electro, and actually the way that the trade is built, it ruins the page turn. Because if you're reading the real book, they open up the cover and you'll see the first page, and there's standing in shadow. You can see it's Electro, and then you'd flip the page and you see him pull the mask on. But that's all. It doesn't matter. That's irrelevant. One more quick point about the movies versus the comics is that in addition to the characterizations, the costumes here are the Marvel Comics costumes. There's like Captain America looks like Captain America. They're slightly modified.
Stellar.
They're so good.
And so Electro is hired to break someone out of Rikers Island's Supermax prison underwater. And so he in the course of doing that, he breaks not everyone out, but everyone escapes, and they 40 of them
before
40 of them get off the island. 40 of them. And so the new Avengers sort of come together organically in the course of stopping the prison break and then also rounding up everyone else, and that's how the team is formed. And that's the main story. It's drawn by David Finch, who is not my favorite.
Not better than I thought. Better than I thought I would like. Mostly times no, but a lot of times yes.
Yeah, I thought he has sequences that are really good. He's got some sequences that are really bad. He's got some faces that don't emote, but I don't know if it's the nostalgia for the period, but it worked for me for the most part.
That, 100% that. And it was a really interesting time in comic book art, I think, in that. Do we want to do this now, or do we want to talk about that later?
What?
Like this art, like even the storytelling was like there was dashes of the 90s in it. Like,
oh, for sure.
Like, oh, there's still some of that left over, which you kind of don't see as much now unless it's like, you know, Ed McGuinness or you know, is put on a big book or something, or like, you know, Jim Lee draws something. But it was like really the art was of a different time. More notably, though, coloring in this I thought was really interesting to look at and sort of analyze, because I don't think they had digital coloring down.
No, yet. Frank Darmat is the colorist. He's a good colorist. But as we discussed,
he did all the Captain America books that were great.
One of the things we did talk about way back on the show at the time was that they, even a few years later, they hadn't figured out really digital coloring, especially on the Marvel side. It took Marvel a long time to really tone down all the Photoshop effects and all the shading.
The shading, the highlights and stuff.
Yeah, so Marvel took a longer than the other companies figured out. This isn't so bad here, although I was kind of annoyed that Daredevil's hair was more brown than red.
Yeah, but there were times that – you've been complaining about that for decades apparently. Yeah. But there were times where it was like this: the colorist and the art weren't working together.
Yeah,
and you ended up with something in between. And a lot of times, it's on faces. Where now, thanks to your Dave Stewart, Jordi Belair, Matt Wilson, like they've learned to successfully knock a lot of that stuff out.
Yeah, and this was the early days. They had a new toy, and they hadn't really figured out how best to do it yet.
It wasn't as obscene as what had been taking place at the same time as this, and a few years earlier than this, because some of that stuff is pretty heinous.
Yeah. I had totally forgotten the Sentries on the team.
Okay, here's another thing that we can. Sentry shows up, and you know, at the time, We're probably like, this is dumb. Because I don't think the century thing, but I don't think I've completely given up on the century. Like, people were mad about it for different reasons, mostly because they tried to shoehorn him into Marvel history. But now, looking back in this context, I was like, bring it on. I'm so cool with
you
the
You can't hurt me anymore.
He can't. And also, like, it is indicative of the time and what was going on. And I like it like that from a historical sort of standpoint, what was happening with these comics. And so, like, the Sentry showed up, and I was like, you know what? That's interesting. And the way that he was handled is interesting. He barely showed up in this. Like, he was just in the beginning. Really great scene between Foggy and the Sentry and you know, like, what happens.
Then he murders Carnage.
Yes, he does.
Which, was that the last I ever saw Carnage? Possibly.
That's what I wondered. I was like, was that it for Carnage?
He flew him into space and ripped him in half, which was I was totally fine with because I hated Carnage.
Right.
We talk a lot about loving the bringing the team together, and this is like a 6-issue version of that. There's just an awesome grouping he has here, and it just makes a ton of sense. And I love the fact that he has Daredevil in the beginning, and Daredevil was his featured character, but he turns it down. It's not till many years later he finally joins the Avengers. It's a really fun Avengers story. This is,
and it should be noted that, like, I didn't read this at the time, and I remember that Ron, I think the way that this worked was, I believe that he paid, this is how long ago it was, he didn't Amazon them to me, I think he PayPal'd me money, and I didn't ask him to, but he sent me the amount of money it would take to buy the first two trades.
Yeah.
Just how much later, and trades didn't come out, like, on when the day of the sixth issue back then.
Right. So you were behind, you had to do some catching up. Yeah.
Like, I think he PayPal'd me the money. He was like, you buy these right now. And he was 100% right. Like, and I liked it right away. But going back to it, like, it really did a recaptured a feeling for me that I was very surprised about.
Well, this was, we also have talked in the past about our personal eras, right? And so 2000 was when we graduated college. You went to Comic-Con for the first time. You introduced us to a bunch of books like Powers, Transmetropolitan, Preacher, things like that. That was our first sort of reawakening with comics, more on the indie side, where we really started delving deeply into non-superhero stuff.
Go back a few years before that, in 97, is you reintroducing me to comics through
right, with JLA.
Grant Morrison. So,
but this was a continuation of that era for me, in which Bendis starts running Marvel. It's incredibly compelling. It's fun. Johns goes back to DC. You've got JSA. This was a really great. And I want to say pure, but pre-movies, pre-TV shows, pre-people in Hollywood deciding how these characters look and act and dress. And this is almost the end. And that sounds horrible, but it's almost the end of comics purely being a comic form.
And I think that really I think that if you look back at it now in hindsight, like, Civil War is a tipping point for that. While they didn't really have it cast, you know, in terms of who the movies were and everything, but it was reconfigured into what was, you know, what would become all that. So whenever you look at the Civil War stuff, you will see the seeds for all the movies in there, and which is, you know, probably part of the plan that we didn't even know about, or at least a kind of thinking. None of that is here. This is just, let's make an Avengers comic book that is an Avengers comic book. And that's lost. That's gone.
Yeah,
which is amazing.
So here your team ends up being Captain America, Spider-Man, Iron Man, Spider-Woman, Luke Cage, Wolverine, and the Sentry. We won't stay that way for long, but that's basically the team as it stands in this particular story. You had great things like Luke Cage being the guy on the team who's wearing street clothes.
Mm-hmm.
You have Iron Man is basically just there to sort of help with the tech stuff. He doesn't really do much more than that.
Yeah.
He doesn't even pay for the team because Tony Stark's broke at this point.
He kills a T-Rex.
That's true.
I mean, he's pretty, like, there was definitely a level of he's really powerful and that's important.
Yeah. Wolverine is the guy who Captain America's uneasy with, but Tony does say, listen, we need a guy who's going to cross the line because we won't.
Which, by the way, is the same thing as crossing a line.
It was a great configuration. Spider-Woman was someone who's almost a complete blank slate for most people. And she ended up being a really interesting, compelling character. And I know you really liked her recent book, but to me, like, she's no longer that Spider-Woman that's for me.
No, but also because it was fresh and new. And I think one of the things actually really cool is that that design of her costume is great.
It's one of the best costumes ever designed.
It really is. And you kind of, like putting in the modern light, and it's totally, you know, cheesecaked out, and she looks super sexy and whatever, but like, it's a great costume just on its own
merit. It's a great costume, and the thing is, like, I get why costumes are redesigned. They're easier to cosplay. They're easier to translate to the screen. But like, this is the last sort of gasp of pure comic book costumes, Jack Kirby costumes, big bright colors, and ridiculous spandex.
Well, what's funny, Aaron, in his Iron Man's costume, of course, has always changed over time. Yes. Depending on who does it. But this actually, like, Adi Granov, I think it was Warren Ellis when he did what was in the third Iron Man movie?
Extremis. Yeah.
So Adi Granov did I don't remember if it's the whole books or just the covers, but basically his covers on that determined what he looked like in the movies, and he never looked like that again. And I was like, oh, this looks like comic book Iron Man, which I had completely forgotten about. He's kind of bulky.
Yeah.
And it looks, you know, he's like a transformer almost.
He's got giant shoulder belts.
I remember not liking it because I wanted that 80s one, you know, because the Marvel Secret Wars one had. But still, in this context, looking back, and I was like, oh, that's great. This is just.
He even has a weird mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Which is.
And he doesn't spend the whole thing with his mask up.
Yeah, it's fun. They fly over all over the world tracking people down. They end up in the Savage Land. That's where they meet Wolverine.
They're in the Savage Land fighting Sauron. That's the stuff. Who looks like Namor in a lot of this?
Yeah. I just can't tell you how much fun I had reading this. And it was like, at the end of it, I got to the end and, you know, digitally was like, do you want to get the next volume? And I was like, yes, I do. Like, I don't know if I have time for it, but I definitely want to.
I had exactly that experience the other day. I remembered that we were going to do this, and I'd had it sitting on my desk right there, and I went, oh, I gotta start reading that. And I started reading it like in the middle of the workday. Like, I just like went to have a snack, and I read like two of them, and I was like, I don't want to stop. I really like. I love that feel. That's why we do that. That feeling is literally why we do this. I don't want to stop. And so, like, I had my kids all day. I went to a concert yesterday, and I got back, and like, I had to stop on the way home and eat something. And I brought the book with me because I knew I would have to read it at that point.
Right.
And I was so happy. I was just thrilled, like eating a burger and reading this old New Avengers, like at 11 at night. I was like, this is great.
So the interesting thing is that we talked on our Pick of the Week podcast this past week about how with the Avengers now, it's almost impossible to have your old school Bushima, Roger Stern kind of team with like your Black Knights or your your old Captain Marvels. And so I found that funny, lamenting that, but then reading this and loving it so much. It's just, I mean,
well,
Spider-Woman's not a big A-lister.
Luke Cage definitely wasn't.
Yeah.
Luke Cage is that outlier here.
That's true.
You know, in the context of the time, like, he was nobody. He was the Tiara guy.
Right.
Having Wolverine on the team, on the one hand, it's a big, like, he's a heavy hitter, you know, like in sales terms.
Yeah.
On the other hand, that was a big move. Like having him on the team is
weird. It's bold, yeah.
So that's still a left field choice. Daredevil also, although Daredevil's not on the team. You know, and then like Sentry's like a Hercules kind of character, like, you know.
Right.
So you do have that here.
That's true. You do. You're right. You're totally right. I think it's really Spider-Man and Wolverine sort of make it cast a longer shadow than they actually do. But
yeah.
But it ends up being the dynamic's so great because he's so good at writing Luke Cage. He's so good at writing Spider-Man. He ends up being really great at writing Spider-Woman. He's great at Captain America. And for a Bendis book, it's super action-packed. Yep.
Yeah, you're right. It was not. Yeah,
it's not
those. He was really famous back then, more so for having these long dialogue pages where the bubbles would go back and forth, you know, across two spreads. And I thought this was pretty contained. And I think that was one of the things at the time that surprised me, because all through Alias he had done that, all through Ultimate Spider-Man he had done that, where he was still largely dialogue based, and this was really big action set pieces.
He hadn't yet fallen into, and I don't want to say tics. You know, writing tics, but he hadn't yet. It's not like we're at, you know, I think at the point where where John Romita Jr. was drawing, it was where it sort of become like very self-referential Bendis. And I think here he hadn't gotten that point yet. He was new. So.
But there was just enough of what made him great in here.
Yes,
I mean, like
for
almost
sure.
Almost any time that Peter Parker had an interaction with somebody, like, it was delightful.
Yeah.
I found myself, and it's crazy, like, he never did Amazing Spider-Man
right.
for very valid reasons, but it's funny because I know he did Ultimate Spider-Man, and it was important, whatever, but he never did Amazing Spider-Man, which was the book that guy was born to write.
It is interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
Because he did Ultimate Spider-Man, and he wasn't going to be on both books. I think that's sort of the answer. And yeah. Then I think Dan Slott has been writing Amazing Spider-Man since the late 60s.
Right, that's true. He couldn't. There was no way to do it.
It was Dan Slott and Steve Ditko.
Spider-Man ripped his booty.
Uh-huh. So yeah, that was a really good. But he didn't have them all like saying Yiddish all over the place.
Right.
Like that wasn't a thing. If I have complaints.
Yeah.
I think I'd mentioned this, but there's bits of Luke Cage's dialogue that I was like, that's not good. And then even more so than that, I've forgotten. And I remember that we talked about this. Like, he was not good at Wolverine dialogue. Like, Wolverine had said things. I was like,
oh, yeah, he's very colloquial. He calls people – he says y'all.
Yeah, I was like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah, that was weird. I remember thinking
it was too. Such a weird choice for somebody who was not new to Marvel.
Yeah, but those things aside, which the
tone was right, but
yeah, he will grow out of.
Yes,
I had so much fun reading this. This is definitely a great. This was a great time. I think the part of the reason why we're doing this right now, why we're having this conversation right now, is because that time when we started in the beginning was so much fun.
Yes, it was.
If it hadn't been fun, if we hadn't been so in love with comics at the time, we wouldn't have kept doing iFanboy for so long.
Well, yeah, I mean, who knows? No, we don't know how to stop, so it's difficult to it's difficult to say. No, I think you're right. There's a bit with it. I'm just flipping through it. The bit where the helicarrier comes down in the end, and it is 100% takeoff of the Authority.
Right.
And I just you're seeing this like nexus of influences happen here, but they're all still pre-movie, and they're all lurching towards the cinema world that we have today. But like at this point, it's really interesting and important to understand, like. What we have now was unimaginable that would be a thing.
Right.
Like, we had some X-Men movies, and they were fine or whatever, but, like, you know, to be to the point where we're having the Infinity War, and so the amount of change that is taking place within the world of comics and this specific comic book title and property, it's, you know, tectonic.
And this book went on for 6 years.
Yeah.
I mean, it ended, right, was it 2010? I mean, not 2010, 2010, 2010. The movies were out, but they weren't. I don't think they had taken over at that point, you know, because
that point, Avengers hadn't come out yet.
Yeah, I mean, really only Iron Man and Hulk.
Hulk.
I have a list right here. Iron Man 2. I can tell you exactly, or not. I closed it. Anyway, it hadn't really taken over Marvel yet, and so you really had that pure run, that pure last hurrah for your classic Marvel. And that doesn't mean there's not great stuff happening here. There's obviously great stuff happening now, but it was a different feeling.
Me in this.
Yep.
While you look that up, I'm gonna. There's a bit in the beginning where basically Peter Parker is all. They've all. The first issue, by the way, with the actual breakout was fantastic. It was just fantastic. Peter Parker is like in a pit of criminals, and they're all going after him. And Mr. Hyde breaks his arm.
Yeah.
He snaps his arm in half. Later we see him in like a sling at the end of that issue. And then things go on as normal. There's a really great scene where Captain America goes to the school where he's teaching like the next day. And Captain America's like, you came to work? And he's like, I had to work, he's beat to shit, which is really funny. And then like right near the end of the volume, he says something about, like, I broke my arm. I haven't slept in 3 days. So I was like, right, your arm's broken.
Right.
You didn't have to mention that again because I had forgotten, and now none of that makes sense, but that's fine.
Yeah. So this book ended in 2016, and at that point, well, we got in a lot of books. We had a lot of movies since then.
Mm-hmm.
New Avengers went until 2016. So by the end, it was fully into the world of of comics. Volume 1 went to 2010, but there was four volumes of it. So, but that was all. I mean, this is, if anyone is looking for, who's never read this before, who's come on, let's say it's come on in the comics in the last 10 years and came on after this debuted, I mean, you'd be doing yourself a huge favor if you went and checked out this book.
We are always, we're frequently referring to the Morrison Porter JLA as sort of one of those flashpoints. And I feel like, I don't think this is that far from that. And it's a little more modern, so it might be a little more palatable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not so far removed from what you know as comics today.
For sure.
I think I haven't read the JLA one in a little while, but I'm guessing
it's a bit more 90s. You know, you got your mullets and your
blue and red Superman. So But also just to see, like, if you're like, want to look at the seeds of what became, you know, all those Marvel TV shows, or at least the ones I watched, some of that's in here. It's a really interesting time, I think, for comics. And I think it'd be really interesting to hear from people who listen to this, are reading comics now, and go back and read this and see if they come away with the same thing. Like, oh, yeah, comics.
Right.
You know, but it's funny because we were trying to – this actually is renumbered, so it's a culprit. I mean, it's a culprit just as much as anything else. But going back and trying to figure out the history of where this fell was really difficult because of all the renumbering that had been done.
Right. Yeah, we couldn't find where the timeline. Mm-hmm. They're all in collections. All that stuff is collected. Is there an omnibus? There is an omnibus. If you're into that kind of craziness. He had on his run, he had great artists. He had Finch, he had McNiven, he had Deodato, he had Chaykin, he had Maleev, Jim Chung. Like, those guys all throughout the years of New Avengers, he had really great artists doing it. Mm-hmm. And this was the center of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, and it felt like it was supposed to. That was supposed to be the point, and it succeeded in that way.
Yeah. So
it made me forgive him for killing off Clint Barton when that actually meant something.
Now, we didn't give a spoiler warning, but here's your spoiler warning at the end of the show. But for future issues, did he come back through Ronin? Is that when Clint first came back?
New Avengers 27.
Right, but like that was when he came back from the dead. Was as Ronin? Was that it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I was trying to remember that as
although,
I was reading.
No, but Ronin was also Echo? No.
Yeah.
Maya.
Yeah.
But I don't remember the timeline for that. But he was Ronin when he came back to the team.
Right.
I think. And that was like in the 20s of this series.
It was a great series. And if you go back to the archives, you'll see this was a pick of the week perennial, this title. And it still has one of the best final issues. But then I think they immediately rebooted it. Didn't that happen? I don't remember. It's irrelevant because the New Avengers Volume 1 Breakout is terrific. I highly recommend it. Brian Michael Bendis, David Finch, Danny Mickey, a lot of great people on it. Frank D'Armada.
So Ronan was originally Maya Lopez.
Right.
That was in New Avengers 11. Maya Lopez originally showed up in – she's a deaf woman with photographic resources. She originally showed up in the Daredevil series that Bendis was writing.
Right.
She showed up in this in issue 11. So she's going to show up relatively soon in the next volume of this, basically. Second person to do Ronan, becoming Ronan when he rejoined the New Avengers in the aftermath of Civil War.
Mm.
He attempted to hand the costume back to Echo after she was rescued from the hand, but Echo declined and allowed him to keep it. Clint Barton later resumed his Hawkeye identity during the start of the Heroic Age.
All right.
That's when it all starts to go downhill.
Yes. It's all tied to Hawkeye.
He's the linchpin.
The health of the universe, of the Marvel Universe, is tied to the health of Hawkeye. If he's running around as Ronin, something's wrong.
Well, clearly then the health of the cinematic universe is not.
No, it's inverse. It's an inverse property for the comics and the movies.
But it's true. Like, they had to kill him in order to restart.
That's true. He was the big death. It wasn't Ant-Man and it wasn't the Vision. One is a founding of Avengers. The other one has been around forever. But it was Hawkeye who was the big death.
When Scarlet Witch inadvertently alters reality, Hawkeye is resurrected with no memory of previous events. So that's apparently the explanation. When a young mutant named Layla Miller gives several heroes, including Hawkeye, the ability to remember, he's horrified at the Scarlet Witch's actions, and Hawkeye shoots Wanda in the back with an arrow. You remember that? I don't remember that.
He's always shooting people.
Well, that's kind of his thing.
He shot Bruce Banner in the head. He shot...
In retaliation, one of her... That was great, by the way. I like later surly Hawkeye, but I only like him in the context of it's the thing that's going to happen in the future, not in the present.
Right.
Make sense?
That's funny.
In retaliation, one of her recreated children wipes Hawkeye from existence, killing him once more. When the Scarlet Witch's reality is eventually undone, Hawkeye is still presumed dead. However, the recently formed New Avengers find his bow and arrows on the site of the old Avengers mansion, pinning up an article about his death. Unknown to the New Avengers, we're not talking about this book anymore. Hawkeye is I'm just reading Wikipedia to you, but you can't deny that this is fascinating. Hawkeye is resurrected once reality is restored. He seeks out Doctor Strange, who offers Hawkeye shelter when he comes to terms with his new life. against the advice of Doctor Strange, he travels to Wundagore Mountain. This is in the famous closet issue, number 27. Or 26?
27, maybe.
Finds the Scarlet Witch living a normal life with no memory of her past and apparently without mutant abilities. The two become intimate, of course. And Hawkeye then leaves Wanda to her normal life. Returning to the United States, he learns about the assassination of Captain America, confronts Tony Stark, who offers Hawkeye the Captain America shield. And Hawkeye is later inspired by the words of Kate Bishop. So he almost became Captain America.
That's right. I remember that.
I mean,
I distinctly remember him getting the shield and him saying no. So here's my question to you.
Both those things are right.
Has Hawkeye ever fully recovered from dying at the end of Avengers Breakdowns before this issue?
No.
I don't think he has. I don't think Hawkeye's forever fully recovered.
He never recovered from after disassembled.
That's what I mean.
Because basically he's got to carry the weight after that.
Yeah.
And they never quite let it go, even if they're not directly referencing it. Now, you can talk about – we're not talking about it from a publishing story selling standpoint because the Fraction Aja – Hawkeye series was
it's great.
It was a really important thing. It was great, but it's not Hawkeye.
But the traditional Marvel Comics Hawkeye has never been the same since the issue before this trade. I think I would posit.
I think that's generational though. Like I don't think that Hawkeye fits into what this world is.
Well, damn it! I don't want to live in this world if that Hawkeye doesn't fit in it.
You do. I mean, there's a version of him we get, and they've tried, but it doesn't. Yeah, we're telling truths.
this is
hard truths.
I'm going to go ponder that and the nature of existence and where Hawkeye's place in it. Meanwhile, what you should do is go to ifanboy.com. You can find a post for this show. You can tell us what your thoughts are on the New Avengers Volume 1 Breakout. If you read it at the time, if you came across it later, if you are someone who heard the show and checked it out and had never read it before, tell us what you thought about it. It's a terrific, terrific book. Before we get to that, let's finish the show off in the proper style. With ratings, ratings out of 5, it's a tough one.
4.75. Even for its faults, I enjoyed it for its faults in a lot of cases.
Yeah, I'm going to go 4.5.
Yeah.
And sticking with it, are you going to read the next volume?
Yes, I am.
Yes. I have to buy it, but yes.
I have the one after. It's the one after that that's going to get tricky.
So... that's your Booksplode for this month, New Avengers Volume 1, Breakout, and we'll be back in 2 months with the next Booksplode, Undetermined, and next month with the Talksplode, Undetermined, but those are the shows that were unlocked at patreon.com/ifanboy. That's where you can go and help out the show if you want, and we unlock new content like this very show you just listened to. And, of course, every week Josh and I talk about the week's comics on the Pick of the Week podcast, sometimes with special guests. You can find all the action there, ifanboy.com. We thank you for listening. I'm going to go ponder the universe and Hawkeye. I don't know about you guys. I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. I'm not saying he's the linchpin, but something's important. What's a sort of linchpin that isn't quite as obvious?
Not like this, Josh.
Fuck off.
Like this.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.